Welcome to the Living in Oneness Summit, Llewellyn. It's just fabulous to have you with us.
Well, it's wonderful to be here, Steve. I've been a passionate proponent of oneness for 15, 20 years now. So it's wonderful to share with you and to listen to what you have to say and to share with all of your audience, because it's such a vitally important subject.
Oh, gosh, it is. Thank you. And it's so, as we mentioned, some of you were here early. We were talking a little earlier with Llewellyn, and that Llewellyn is such an incredible spokesperson for oneness. And more than that, he is a Sufi leader based in California, travels around the world as a speaker and author, and he is an embodiment of oneness. He just feel oneness in his voice, or I can. I'm sure many of you can too. Llewellyn, let's start at the top. Of course, we're talking about oneness in the inner worlds here, and so can you just share, when we talk about the inner worlds, what you mean by that?
Yes. I mean, as we know from physics, the visible world of matter is about 5% of what exists, and there's dark energy and there's dark matter. But by the inner worlds, I mean those worlds that are invisible to our physical sight, but exist in other dimensions of reality. And traditionally, spiritual practices have given us access to the inner worlds, worlds not visible to our physical senses, but through inner perception. Spiritual practice opens our inner eye, what the Sufis, for example, call the eye of the heart, through which we can experience these inner worlds. And, you know, sadly, one of the greatest censorships of our Western culture has to be to deny the existence of these inner worlds and to say that really the only reality is the outer physical world. And this has been partly caused by scientific rationalism that says the physical is what exists, that's what matters. But also, I think, in its early years by the Catholic Church, which persecuted those who had direct access to the inner worlds, for example, the Druids, who worked with the earth energy and a certain earth magic, the Gnostics, who had direct perception of the inner worlds, and then later, as many of you know, the Cathars, who were healers and who also worked with the inner worlds. So I have a passion about the inner worlds. I feel it's incredibly important to our development as human beings and to our collective development of as a united whole that we reclaim an understanding of the inner worlds. And I should also say that my passion, Steve, partly comes from the fact that my own experience, my own spiritual journey has been very much into the inner worlds. When I was 16, I started meditating, gosh, almost over 50 years ago now, and I suddenly found myself in a completely different reality, I suppose, what I later discovered that the Zen Buddhists would call a reality of no mind or the void. And I was at boarding school at the time, and it was just amazing to close the door of my little room and to sit down to meditate, and suddenly the boarding school and all the rules and everything vanished, and I was in this completely other space of incredible freedom, of just limitless horizon. And then when I was 19, I met my Sufi teacher, Irina Tweedy, and when I was 23, I was woken up in another inner world, which is what I call the plane of the self. This is a plane of oneness, a plane where everything reveals its oneness, everything is known as one. It's pure light, it's pure love, it's pure bliss. This is complete non-duality. There is no time, there is no space. I was in that reality for about 6 months. I couldn't really do anything, and it's changed me completely. I think it's what St. Paul describes when he says, "Now we see through a glass darkly, then we shall see face to face. Now we know in part, then we shall know even as we are known." Again, a completely different reality. It's not here, it's not the physical world, but it's very much part of our spiritual heritage, waking up to that incredible dimension of love and light and pure oneness. And then the journey continued. In my 30s, I was taken into the shamanic worlds. One afternoon, I was meditating. I just dropped down into the shamanic worlds, and I spent about 10 years working in those worlds with what one might call the archetypes or the gods, these primal powers within creation. They taught me about magic. They taught me about the meaning that comes from the inner world. They taught me how to work in the inner world. I even took groups of people on journeys into the inner world, similar to shamanic journeys. So that was in my 30s. It was a very, very important time for me, accessing, learning about this in-between world, what is both belongs to alchemy and to Sufism, the imaginal world. And then later, from my 40s onwards, I began to have access to the angelic worlds, which are another plane of reality, which is very central to Christianity, for example. One thinks of the Jacob's dream of the angels ascending and descending. One thinks of the angel of the Annunciation and the angels that were there with the shepherds at the birth of Christ. So the angelic world is actually very present in Christianity. And they're, of course, incredibly beautiful, angels of power and angels of beauty. And they are here to help humanity. And often when we pray, we really access the angelic world. And then in more recent years, the last decade or so, I've been taken into what the ancients called the anima mundi, the soul of the world, this inner dimension of the spiritual being of the earth, and tried to work with her and to guide people to work with her at this time of the earth's need. So, as I say, I'm very passionate about the inner world. I find it very strange that much contemporary spirituality doesn't seem to work directly with the inner world. It seems, understandably in some ways, about the need to be aware in the present moment, in here and now. But as I say, traditionally, spiritual practices and techniques have enabled us to experience and work with the spirit world. One thinks of the Kogi in South America and their high priests, the mamas, that were actually chosen at birth, and in the first years of their life, they were brought up in complete darkness, often until they were 14. They weren't allowed to be out in the world of light because they first had to have access and learn to work with the inner world, and thus they could help in their healing of the planet, of the energies within the planet, and what they call Aluna, which is the spirit's presence within creation. So I think it's incredibly important that we regain this connection to the inner world. We really reclaim our spiritual heritage, which for some reason, I don't fully understand why, has been denied to us. That people, even who do spiritual practice, they're not taught about the inner world. They're not taught how to work with the inner world. They're not taught what this means. And yet, as I said, traditionally, all the different spiritual practices and traditions, you think of Tibetan Buddhism that works together with the devas and deities, with the protector deities and the old gods of the earth and the mountains. And there are a few hints of it in contemporary spirituality. One thinks of Findhorn, which in Scotland, which, as I'm sure you know, began as a way to work with the devas of nature and to grow things that couldn't otherwise be grown. But these are just hints of a much deeper heritage and spiritual mystical knowledge that I passionately feel we need to reclaim. And oneness is a multidimensional oneness.
Oh, gosh, this is so, I'm so glad we're just going straight in here and talking about the inner worlds as we open up this discussion about oneness, because it's such an important conversation. And of course, you're a great leader here. Ken Wilber, in his who's of course a philosopher based in Denver, Colorado, and his material includes this all quadrants, all level material. It's a quadrant, and of course the external world is on the right side of the quadrant, and the internal world, what we're talking about, the inner worlds, is on the left side of the quadrant. And one of the things he shares also that relates to this is he's saying that we have a flatland. He calls it a flatland because all of the focus is on the external world, just as Llewellyn is sharing. We've lost our sense of the inner world.
I call it the Flat Earth Society. We belong to a Flat Earth Society.
yes, a flat Earth society that's all external world, and where we've
right.
lost our appreciation for and connection with the inner worlds. And likewise, Stephen Covey, who, of course, transitioned a couple of years ago, used to talk about the importance of living inside out, that it starts actually with our connection to the divine within. And where that's not happening, and we do it in reverse, we create an outside-in type world, then we have the kind of dysfunction that we have today. We
Very
need to
uncool.
go.
Yes.
It has to be inside out, which is what creates the balance. I want to share, too, one of the websites I mentioned earlier of Lou Ellen's, at workingwithoneness.org. If you go to that site, you'll see in the bottom left a corner a video there that says You Are Oneness, and invite you to click on that, because it talks really about this. And you know, within humanity's team, these first steps with oneness are one, just to our, you know, to really this message that Llewellyn has, that we are oneness. It's not like we're creating something new. Ultimate reality
no.
is that we already are all one.
The mystics have always known that. It's a kind of foundational mystical experience, the oneness. The Sufis call it the unity of being. It's all
yes.
one. How could it not be one?
This timeless truth, ancient truth, contemporary truth, timeless truth, and it's such a beautiful video. I invite you to check that video out on workingwithoneness.org on Llewellyn's site. It's really stunning. And then the next step after we know that we're one is to just create our spiritual practice where we go within and do our inner work, this inner journey, our spiritual practice, which is meditation or prayer or walking in nature or whatever way that we go about connecting with the divine on a daily basis so that we can live in that energy. Otherwise, we're just pointers to oneness, and we're not ourselves really an embodiment of oneness, which is the whole point of life, the whole invitation here in life anyway, isn't it,
it is.
Llewellyn? So,
It is.
And
it
I know is. You have a deep spiritual practice. You can tell just by talking to you. What are, and you've just mentioned, you know, wow, fascinating that you work with shamans and so on, even training in with these people and these groups in this process of going within. What how do you invite people to create their spiritual practice?
Well, there are two sides of my work, Steve, and one is I'm a traditional Sufi teacher, and belonging to the Naqshbandi Sufi order, we practice the silent meditation of the heart, which is we focus on love within the heart, and we go into the love, and it takes us beyond the mind, first into the state of dhyana, complete absorption of the senses, and then beyond into the plane of samadhi, which is waking up on the plane of the self, first experience as a place of being, or peace, or pure love, and then you wake up on the plane of the self. The shamanic work I'm describing happened to me in my 20s. I was studying the idea of the imagination as a way to experience the inner worlds. And literally one afternoon I was taken right down into the inner worlds, and I was taught not by shamans, but by the energies in the inner worlds themselves. And they explained to me how they worked, how we had rejected them, what effect this has had on them. And for example, I just give you an example. You know, one was the figure of time, the archetype of time, who explained to me the deep meaning of time, which we've lost contact with. I think the Mayans had an incredible understanding of time and the cycles of time, and how the cycles of the stars and the planets relate to the cycles in our own body, and of course the cycles of the soul and the deeper purpose of life. And we've instead kind of imprisoned ourselves in this strange image of time, of these minutes and hours which we have to cram so many things into. And I came to understand in those, I spent 10 years working in the inner worlds, and then that particular work was done, that if we're to have any real transformation, we have to learn or to regain the knowledge of working with the inner world, with the forces within creation. This is, say, what spiritual practice has done over the millennia. Carl Jung, who in a way gave us back our Western tradition of the alchemical understanding of the inner world, he called these energies in the inner world the great deciding factors, the riverbeds of life. They are very, very powerful, and they determine civilizations, and we need to learn to work with them if we're to have any real change, any lasting transformation. I'm sure you know, Steve, the joke of the young monk who goes to the hot dog seller and says, make me one with everything. And what's less known is the second part of this story, is that so the hot dog seller makes one with everything, and he gives it to the Zen monk, who hands him $20. And the Zen monk with his hot dog stands waiting there. Today, Zen monks don't just have a vow of poverty and go with a begging bowl. They get money sometimes, and they can go to hot dog stands. And he stands there, and he's waiting. And finally, he says to the hot dog seller, where's my change? And the hot dog seller looks at him straight on and said, don't you know all change comes from within? And this is something which is a very simple truth that we tend to overlook. Now, I have a friend who's a pre-Socratic Greek philosopher, and particularly the teachings of Parmenides, who was the founder of Western civilization. He gave us 500 years before the birth of Christ. He gave us logic. He gave us reason. He gave all the tools which created, in a way, Western civilization. Now, where did he get these teachings from? Where did he get this wisdom from? He was taken into the realm of the goddess on a chariot. He went down into the world of the goddess, and there she gave him all of the teachings of existence. And in fact, one of the central teachings that Parmenides was given by the goddess is everything is one. There is only one being. There is only one. And then she gave him other teachings about existence. But it was from the inner worlds. Now, as you know, Steve, we're caught in what many people call an old story, a very destructive story, a story of separation, a story of consumerism, of materialism gone mad. And many people articulate the need for a new story, that humanity as a whole needs a new story, a story, as you know, based upon oneness, based upon our interconnectivity. That's why I was so deeply moved to read in Pope Francis's recent encyclical, Care for Our Common Home, the need to feel intimately united with all that exists. This is the new story, and many of us, like yourself, like me, and many other people, I'm sure, listening in, are working hard to find a way to give birth to a self-sustaining story that recognizes the oneness of all of creation. And yet, we are still caught in this nightmare of consumerism and this crazy pathological story that we need stuff, endless stuff, to satisfy our desires. And what is going to free us from this story? Reason doesn't seem to have that effect. Reason doesn't seem to work. And the ancient teachings say we need to go deep within. We need to go to the forces within creation, what I call the magic within creation, to give us the power, to give us the energy to create a new story, to break free from this story that is destroying our planet at an alarmingly increasing rate, ever accelerating, this self-destructive neurosis that we are heading towards the cliff of complete destroying our own ecosystem. And we need a new story, desperately. But this story traditionally, Steve, comes from the inner world, comes from the beings, the forces, the power in the inner worlds that can break us free from the dark magic of consumerism, from this nightmare that we are living. And this is one of the reasons I feel it's so important that we need to regain a connection. We need to learn once again how to listen, how to work with the inner world. And there are many different inner worlds, as I've said, and different people are drawn to work with different aspects of the inner world. I have a friend, Sandra Ingemann, who teaches people how to work with the spirit world and how to heal nature and heal themselves through accessing the spirit world. And of course, as I said, you can work with the angelic world, with these beautiful, beautiful beings that are incredibly powerful and know the future and give us guidance. They belong more to the realm of light. recently I have been drawn to work with, I said, the soul of the world. And I say to people, there's a saying of Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist monk, and he says, was asked, what can we do to heal the world? And he says, first you have to listen to the sound of the earth crying. And I take that further and say, listen to the sound of the soul of the world crying. We have forgotten the world is a soul. We say we have a soul. Yes, we have a spiritual soul. But what was understood always was that our soul was part of the world's soul, that the world is also a spiritual being, and we need to reclaim that connection. We need to learn to reconnect with the world's soul, with the anima mundi, to work with us. So, look, if we are going to try and heal and transform the world, we want to work together with all of the levels of creation. There is this misunderstanding. The world is something physical to be solved through science and technology. But the world was created, as many of us know, as a multidimensional reality. And for example, in the medieval time, they imaged this as the great chain of being in which all the levels of reality were connected together. And I think this is so essential if we're going to grow up as human beings and shake off this cloud of materialism and this childishness with which we rape and pillage our mother. You know, that's why Pope Francis, he talked about care for our common home. And there are angels here, and there are spirits here, and there are the great forces within nature, what shamans call the devas within nature. And if we're going to heal the ecological problems, why not work with these ancient and powerful forces within creation? As I say, they started to do this at Findhorn in the early years, and hint of that. But this is why, you know, the wisdom of the shaman and the priests that were repressed so long ago in the Western world, you know, is so important. And we have to reclaim our heritage, our spiritual heritage and our mystical heritage. And awareness of oneness is the first step in that. But as you said, so definitely, you know, we can't have a flat earth oneness. 10 years ago, my son Emmanuel went around the world interviewing people about oneness, part of what he called the Global Oneness Project, and all sorts of people around the world. And he interviewed an Australian Aboriginal elder. You know, what do you think of oneness? And the first question the Australian Aboriginal elder asked him was, what sort of oneness are you talking about? Are you talking about white man's oneness? And I found that so pertinent, because for the Aboriginal, oneness includes not only all of the plants and the beings of the earth, but also, for example, the dream time and the forces within creation, the songs behind creation, because they have a deeper understanding of oneness. So in a way, we need to go beyond the flat earth society of oneness into the rich heritage we have within us. And part of my work is to, in a way, take the side of the inner world, speak up for those that we can't hear anymore.
Absolutely. Oh, my gosh. What just so many important topics you just covered here, Llewellyn. You mentioned your son's work. Emmanuel von Lee is Llewellyn von Lee's son, and he runs the Global Oneness Project. Many of us receive those emails, and, of course, the Global Oneness Project creates all these incredible videos that focus on our oneness with the earth, and with often a special focus on ecology and how we're desecrating the earth today and how we really need to turn that around. We need to nurture the earth. One of the things that you said, and there were so many powerful things you just talked about, Llewellyn, but you said we need to acknowledge and recognize the world as a living being with its own light. And that is so true, that so often it seems like today, in today's world, and in the Western world anyway, and I think for much of the earth, there's this almost, we almost treat the earth like a refrigerator where, you know, just where we just harvest indiscriminately and, oh, I need this resource, I need that resource, and we just pull it out of the earth, and we don't at all see the sacred acknowledging and recognizing the world, the earth, as a being with its own light. And that's so essential, isn't it?
I think this is incredibly important. There are two things here. First is, you know, the earth even in its time of distress, is not a problem to be solved. And I was deeply joyed when Pope Francis also echoed this in his encyclical. The earth is not a problem to be solved. The earth is a living being in distress. And you don't approach it as a problem to be solved. You approach it like your mother, like something sacred you need to learn to work with, to work together with. And then you said about it being sacred, and this is so primary. If I would say anything, I would say remember the earth is sacred. If you approach it as sacred, then you go in the right relationship to it. You're not going to rape what is sacred. You're not going to pillage what is sacred. And we have to reclaim this relationship to the sacred within creation. It is, to me, the most primary calling. And, I've been meditating for over 50 years, Steve, and I've been taken deep into the inner worlds, far beyond the physical world, into realms of light, into realms of love, into these planes of non-existence, which are unbelievable. And yet something always calls me back, and it calls me back to this central mystery of creation, which has to do with its sacred nature. And in fact, it's interesting, one often has one's first experience often tells, in some ways, the whole story of one's life. And when I was 16 and I was what one might call woken up by reading a Zen koan on the London subway, I suddenly found myself in this garden, and it was so beautiful, and the flowers were so beautiful. I was at a boarding school near a river, and I used to go to this garden in the afternoons away from the sports fields and the study halls, and I would sit there often alone, and suddenly I saw colors I'd never seen before. I saw the light sparkling on the water. There was beauty. There was joy I never knew. And it was as if nature was showing me her real face, not the face of utilitarianism. And I've been called back again and again and again to remember this beauty, so fleeting, so transient. We treat the world so badly, and she is still so beautiful, and she gives us so much. And it's this call of the earth. That's why when I put together this book, Spiritual Ecology, I called it The Cry of the Earth, Spiritual Ecology, The Cry of the Earth, because the earth is calling to us. It needs us. It needs our attention, not just our physical attention, but our spiritual attention. It needs the light of our own prayers. We can pray for others, so we can pray for the earth. It needs us. To remember that it is sacred, that everything is sacred. And this is, of course, something indigenous people the world over have understood for millennia. And why did we forget? What happened? Where did we go wrong? How did we lose the story that is life story, that is our story, that is the story of this one being of which we are all a part? And once you make this connection in your heart, in your soul, you care for your soul, you care for the soul of the earth, you treat things with respect, you treat the earth with respect. And then we can, as Thomas Berry says, we can regain the great conversation that we've lost, the conversation with the rivers, with the clouds, with the mountains. In Tibetan Buddhism, they understand this. They talk about the deities in the mountains, the deities in the rivers, and the forces within creation. And we can become alive again, and maybe the earth can wake up from this nightmare of materialism that is polluting the outer. And what I discovered most sadly, and this is, I wrote a book about it called Darkening of the Light, polluting the inner. And this is one area that's very difficult to explain, particularly in contemporary Western spirituality, that we recognize the outer pollution of the world, but understanding the inner spiritual pollution doesn't seem to be so easy for us. And yet, there are these in-between worlds. The Sufis have long understood them, so did the alchemists, so did many traditions. The Sufis understand as the imaginal. The great Sufi Ibn al-Arabi wrote a lot about it. That we have desecrated the inner worlds too, and it's through the inner worlds that the water of life should flow pure and free, and that healing and transformation and inspiration comes. And our dreams have been turned into desires. We no longer dream the dreams of a living earth. We dream the dreams of a consumerist society. And our hopes are false hopes. And, to me, this is the great sadness. And here you hear the cry of the soul of the earth. Just help me. I am in distress. I need you. But going into the inner worlds, one often finds the same wasteland as in the tar sands of North America in Alberta, where we are destroying this beautiful ecosystem for a few barrels of oil, for a few coins of silver, Steve.
Oh, don't I know it, and I'm sure I'm speaking for everybody on this call. Your material, there's some material called Darkening of the Light that Llewellyn has written that is very powerful and speaks to many of these themes that Llewellyn's reviewing on the call, and it just goes into great depth. It's beautiful, Darkening of the Light. Maybe at the end of the call we can just get to how people can read that material. It's very powerful. But one of the things that you share in there that's very hopeful is in 2012, of course, as we look at the Mayan prophecy, 2012 was a big year, and you felt something happening, and you even saw an eagle land on a nearby, and of course there was meaning in that, and I know it encouraged you. But let me get to I want to come back to that, because I want to there are listener questions that are coming in from all over the place. I want to make sure we bring them in. We're already 35 minutes into our 60 minutes. Elizabeth in Portland shares, don't we firstly have to break through denial to gain self-awareness of our wounds to move through the models of healing to begin? Is there anything linear? You just mentioned awareness. How do we help others get to awareness?
I have been very encouraged here by the work of Joanna Macy, who has this work called The Work That Reconnects. I'm sure you know her work. And she has been working in this field from a Buddhist perspective for many, many years. And she was actually one of the few people that really understood what I was talking about in The Darkening of the Light. And she talks about the need to acknowledge grief. And she talks about this outwardly. She's been with many ecological workers, environmentalists, and she says there comes a time when they all have to deal with their grief at what is happening to the world. And this is something I've experienced going inwardly. And I would say that this is a barrier for many people, and yet also a tremendous healing, that because grief takes us deep within the heart. And one thing in which she echoes something I firmly believe, and also Thich Nhat Hanh writes very eloquently about, is that it is our love for the earth that in the end will be the greatest force for healing. And grief that takes us into our heart. If you really grieve for something, you are touched deeply by it. And that takes you within the heart. And then, as I said, for me, it often takes me back to that experience I had when I was 16. Suddenly I saw colors for the first time I didn't know existed. I saw this beauty. I saw this the light dancing on the water. I saw a world I'd never seen before. And so it is this love. The earth is so beautiful. It has given us so much. It has given us life. And if we feel first the grief of what is happening, and then this grief can take us deep within our hearts to this bond of love that exists between our heart and the heart of the world. So I would say first, you know, listen to the earth. Watch the earth, be aware, or the Sufis talk about witnessing, which is why I called the subtitle of this book, Witnessing the End of an Era, and then feel, because if you don't have feeling, there is no connection. And first there is grief, and then the grief takes you to love. And then the love takes you to the real connection with the earth, this connection of love. She is our mother. She gave us birth. She gave us this experience. We should treasure them. One of the things I've experienced as getting older, Steve, I'm sure maybe you have too, is that you see how fleeting this whole life's experience is, how little time we have and how much we are given. And you should be grateful. We are grateful. And the feeling of love. And as I say, like Joanna Macy says, it is our love for the earth that is the most important. And the Sufis echo it because they say love is the most powerful force in creation. Love can move mountains. Love can move hearts. And love for the Sufi is, of course, a direct connection with God, whom we call our beloved. Because for the Sufi, the whole of creation is a love affair. So it takes us back to this real connection of the heart.
Yes, and I love just this reminder, you know, so often with something that's hard, that's challenging, grief, you know, to maybe want to run away from it or leave it, and you're saying, no, we need to go down into it, because when we go down into grief, it takes us to love, and then when we go down into love, love takes us to connection.
That's
and, of
right.
course, then we create healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so important, isn't it? And, of course, as we look at the other challenges we have in life, it's similar to don't run away from it. Go down
yeah.
into it, and it takes us to good things. It's hard. It's part of this whole inner journey.
Where
inner work isn't always easy. In fact, it's often not easy. But it takes us to a good place when we stay with it. There's another piece to this from Elizabeth. She brought in several questions. The other part related to others. How can we help others get to awareness? Because she says many of us are connected to networks of people. And what might you recommend to help bring awareness to others and to even impact and influence networks of people that we're connected to?
Well, if you speak with love and conviction, that note of love is heard around the world, which is why Mother Teresa said, small things with great love. If you do it with love, you give it to God and he makes it infinite. I actually have a great belief in the importance of small groups. I'm not very keen on big organizations. I think networks of organizations, networks, that is wonderful. But I, you know, have a group in which you explore these issues, in which you share. I say spiritual ecology is the passion I have been working with for over a decade now. You explore our spiritual relationship to the earth, and then these are the seeds of the future, Steve. We're coming to the end of a civilization, and we need to plant the seeds of the future. And not every seed flowers, not every seed flourishes, but I believe very much in the organic wholeness of life. And what I have been shown is that life is trying to regenerate. Life as a living, organic wholeness, interdependent, interconnected, is trying to regenerate. And it needs individuals, and particularly small groups of individuals, non-hierarchical. Please, no hierarchy. As little structure as possible, because we've had enough hierarchies for the last 2,000 years. The patriarchy were very good at that. I don't think they work necessarily very well. Who can hold these seeds of a new consciousness, these seeds of the future, these seeds of a new relationship to the earth, a new relationship to the soul of the earth, a new responsibility for the earth. It can be a small group of people doing permaculture or having backyard gardens or reading poetry, connecting to the sacred within life. There are so many ways, as Rumi says, there are so many ways to kneel and kiss the ground. It doesn't matter what you do, if it comes from the right place within the heart, if it comes from the connection. And then, like any organic wholeness, it will spread. Life, it can restructure itself. Don't try to impose a plan. The earth has had enough of human plans, and they usually go terribly wrong. Learn to listen to the earth. And as I say, what I have been shown is that it's the small groups connected, like you are connecting groups of people through your work, through your message, that the seeds of the future can germinate, not big organizations. I don't think politicians can be changed. I think they belong to the old ways, and I think the future will be very, very different, at least what I have been shown of the future. So that's how it is for me. Maybe other people see it differently.
Yes, well... again, so important, and again, there's many things that you're touching on, but I love that you brought in the Mother Teresa quote, and,
mm-hmm.
and as we talk about influencing others, that, and I think, you know, we overlook that there is so much impact we can have, so much influence, you know, I'll even use the word power, where we just really live in oneness, where we embody it to the best of our ability, and of course, in Humanities Team, this is our the invitation that we extend, because if I think most people on this call, perhaps everybody, feels that this timeless truth, what has been shared by mystics and philosophers increasingly now, contemporary scientists in quantum physics in particular, that everything really is one. There's just the divine. We're all expressions of it. And if that's true, then why would we live in an illusion of separation? Why would we do that?
The Sufis say because we have forgotten, forgetfulness.
Right.
I call forgetfulness the most potent poison. We've forgotten that the earth is sacred. We've forgotten that it matters. We've forgotten that we are sacred. We have forgotten that we are part of the spark of our soul is part of the light of the world soul. We have forgotten so much. And as I said, we have forgotten about the inner worlds and the mysteries and the wisdom of the inner worlds. It's strange, Steve. We think ourselves as a culture that knows so much, that is gaining knowledge every day. And yet, from a spiritual perspective, we are a culture that has forgotten so much and is forgetting more every day. When I was young, I studied sacred geometry. I went to Chartres Cathedral and studied in particular the maze in Chartres Cathedral, which is actually created as a 13-pointed star, which is the esoteric number of Christ. And you walk through the maze, through all the planetary cycles, and then you turn and face the rose window from the west that touches your heart. And that is just a little example of a whole esoteric wisdom we have forgotten. It's like I grew up in England, and there are all these beautiful little medieval churches in England, all built upon sacred proportions, all placed upon ley lines, which has to do with the power within the earth. And this is all part of a wisdom, earth wisdom, natural magic, that we have forgotten. So we have to remember. We have to remember this wisdom, this our heritage, our spiritual heritage. And it's going to take time, but the earth can work with us. The powers within creation will work with us. The angels want to work with us. The devas are longing to work with us. It's just we who have turned away from them and said, the physical world is all that exists. And sadly, as I say, a lot of contemporary spirituality echoes that. I often think when people talk about awakening spiritually, they really mean awakening to the oneness, the multidimensionality, the pure love that belongs to the self. Can we get away from this flat earth society? Can we reconnect with the mystery within creation? I could go on forever. As I said, it is a passion for me.
we are going to spend like about the last 4 minutes just going to some of the upcoming programs. So we've got about, I don't know, 5 or 7 minutes. I love, Llewellyn, that you're bringing in all these powerful forces of creation, the shamans, you know, and devas, the angelic realm. Of course, you know, Jesus, Moses, Muhammad in the monotheistic tradition, the soul of the world. And as you share, all of these powerful forces of creation are just waiting. They're at this time in the Earth's evolution to be active with us. So it's just a matter of taking that time to call in these powerful forces of creation, these different parts of the inner world, these inner world experiences to help us and to help our families and our communities and ultimately the world around us. I love that invitation. And you mentioned you call attention to the pollution in our inner worlds, and I love that. We're not going to have time to explore that right now, but it's actually something that's so important. I came from Silicon Valley, and where I was a leader there in technology, and I used to be part of business groups with other leaders in technology, and I know from the busy lives that we had and that they have there now that we can get so busy and so focused on things, you know, growing our staffs and revenues and profits and all these crazy things, that we do in fact pollute our inner world, and that has repercussions for our family, for our marriage, for our community, and for the world. And so important.
More than we know, Steve.
Oh, more than we know. We had a whole call a few weeks ago with an integral leader who was saying that as leaders in organizations and families, those things that are going on in our inner world will and do manifest in our families, in our communities, and in the world. And he was talking in a business context and saying specifically, look around your business if you want to know what the problems are in your inner world, you'll see it because it's manifesting in your business. That's
right.
What happens when we're not really taking the time to develop our spiritual practice. So it's so important. But let me come back to one more question, because this comes to kind of the third step here as we talk about spirituality. The first step, of course, is just realizing that we're all one, that this is ultimate reality. The second step is building our spiritual practice. And the third step is then really getting out in the world in our spiritual activism to help steward the earth and steward humanity. So this question is from Alex in Dublin Pleasanton. He says, people are angry and frustrated these days. It's obvious how most of us are running around trying to survive the nightmare without really knowing why. How can those who have a glimpse into the inner world and are in a way between these worlds help with healing and transformation in another world? How do you survive in the world as a mystic?
This is a very, very, very important question, actually. I wish I had more time to explore it in detail. First of all, it's really important to have a spiritual practice that can really ground you in something that is real, whether it's mindfulness, awareness of breath, meditation, a serious spiritual practice that takes you beyond this noise of distraction that eats our life energy all the time. And then the next step, you know, yes, you be aware of the grief of what is happening within the world and the anger that you feel about it. Sometimes I get very, very angry. And then there is this important question which has to do with action. How can we act? And what is so important is that our action comes from a place of prayer, comes from a connection, not another idea. There are these basic principles that belong to creation. In spiritual ecology, I have Oren Lyons, who talks about the original instructions that were given to the first peoples in America, which have to do with getting on together, and getting on together not just physically, but with all of this multi-dimensional reality. We're actually starting a very small program, I believe, in small things, which is a youth fellowship in spiritual ecology for people of the younger generation, people in between 20 and 30. If you go to the Spiritual Ecology website, you can find a connection to it. It's first of all to study these principles of spiritual ecology, which have to do with a spiritual relationship, reclaiming a spiritual relationship with the earth. What does this mean? And then how can we bring these ideas into action, into projects that can create lasting change? I belong to the old generation. We were part of bringing these spiritual traditions from the East to the West. That's been my journey for 50 years now. And many people belong to that generation, whether all sorts of spiritual practices that brought this understanding of oneness, of real connection from India, from the Middle East to the West. And there is a need, Steve, I feel, for the younger generation now to take up this story and to take these ideas and put them into action, not action built upon profit or quick change, but upon spiritual ideals and lasting change. And there are many different aspects of working, whether like you do, putting something over the internet or starting a small community based upon respect for the earth and the sacred principles within the earth. And this is for the next generation. This is going to be their work. We have these seeds of understanding that we have been given, this mystical truth that everything is one, the unity of being, which, as I say, is central to Sufism and is central to your work. And then these, the Shakers, who was a mystical group in America, they had this lovely expression, hands to work and hearts to God. We live, how are we going to live this connection? How are we going to live this love for the earth in ways that will create a lasting change for the future? And that's very, very important. That to me is, as you say, the third stage in the work. And it can be doing work like you do over the internet and bringing this awareness to as many people as possible. Or it can be just a small group of people. It doesn't matter. It's not about size. This is, again, a myth of the patriarchal community. It is about intention, about real intention that comes from the true place. That's why you need the spiritual practice to connect you to that true place within yourself. And as I say, this is a seed work we are starting now, Spiritual Ecology Youth Fellowship, to enable people to take that step, enable the next generation, because it's the world of my children and my grandchildren that they are going to live in.
Mm, yes, it is. Boy, Spiritual Ecology Youth Program, I love that. And yes, and the millennials are, or I guess they call this younger generation, the millennials. And
that's what I understand.
And, yes, and they are looking. They're hopeful. They want meaning in their work. They want meaning in their life. And so, absolutely, for them to come in, and many already are in. I suspect there are many listening on this call now.
I hope so.
Absolutely.
I hope so.
Because this is. There's a wonderful millennial here who lives near me in Boulder. In fact, just like a block away, Shutescott Martinez is his name. He is the leader of the Earth Guardians. You might have heard
of
him.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Well,
I've read it. Wonderful
yeah,
work.
He's only 15 years old. He goes to school with my son at a school called Watershed. He'll be part of Global Oneness Day this year on the Creating our Earth Home panel. And he's amazing. He just spoke at the United Nations with Robert Redford.
He actually endorsed spiritual ecology for us. I was very grateful to have somebody of his generation who belongs to the future.
Fantastic. Well, he is. I've had a chance to really watch this young man on a day-to-day basis, and he lives it. And it's why he's such an incredible spokesperson. People that really live it are so powerful when they speak. And only 15 years old.
I think there are many souls who are here who have been born here now to help the world make this transition.
Yeah, I do too. I do too. And that's the beautiful thing is this is all being orchestrated, but not by any of us.
Absolutely.
It's being orchestrated by Spirit.
By Spirit.
And yeah, there's a huge awakening going on. And, you know, we've talked about the Pope's encyclical. He's got just a loud voice here now or an important voice.
It brought me to tears reading his encyclical because I'd been like a voice in the desert on the fringes talking about this for over a decade, and then suddenly this was, he has the biggest pulpit in the world, and suddenly to hear his voice really resonant with a mystical truth as well as a spiritual connection with oneness, with what is sacred, with this care for our common home. Oh, I just cried when I read it.
Me too. We actually, it came out on a Thursday, and we had put out a communication on Sunday inviting everybody to read it. By the way, we're going to do something that we've never done before, if it works for you, Llewellyn. We always start and stop calls on time. In this case, everybody's saying, oh, no, let's go on, and they found a way to extend this call 15 minutes. I don't
Very
know if
nice.
You have
a wonderful Steve.
If you have another 15
the
minutes,
the magic of the
great.
Internet. I am here for the day. We could talk for hours.
Well, thank you. Thank you. That gives us a little more elbow room here. So we're going to go to 11:15 Pacific time. We've got another, about 18 minutes. So thank
Great.
You. And, to listeners, I know some of you probably have to go. Others that can stay, hang with us because this is such a just important conversation. And thank you to my partners and colleagues, Dee Meyer, Nanette Kennedy, Penny Heipel, who arranged to move this call out another 15 minutes. One of the things I wanted to get to kind of get to that third step of the whole spiritual activism here, Llewellyn, is just to talk about the relationship of the inner worlds, which are so important for individual and especially global transformation. So to now come out to, you know, spiritual activism, this whole aspect of transformation, personal and global transformation, can you... You know, talk about that a little bit.
Yes, I mean, it's interesting that I was recently interviewed by somebody who's introducing this field of subtle activism, which is about spiritual activism does not just have to be physical. We think, yes, there are things to be done in the physical world. There are also work to be done in the spirit world. And, you know, there's a simple act that practice that I give people in my group about praying for the earth, about putting the earth as a living being into your hearts and offering it to God in your prayers and devotion, because if you can pray for other people, you can also pray for the world. prayer is incredibly powerful, and often in prayer, as I said, you connect with the angelic world, that is the divine intermediary for prayer very often, and I think the angelic world is very, very important. And it's really I have a great belief in the individual and the deep knowing within the individual. We are all part of this living oneness, and yet we are unique. This is part of the mystical paradox of creation in the created world, that we are part of one being, one living being, and yet we are all unique, and we all have a unique purpose, a unique calling, if you like, a unique note imprinted within our souls when the soul came into creation, when it came into the womb of our mother. And we can each help the world in our own way, and that's why I always start first, listen, ask. Unfortunately, in the West, we're a culture of doers before being. This is the masculine. I've got to do something. The feminine wisdom, the Taoist wisdom, has to do with being, has to do with, first of all, listening. This is in Sufism. We are taught to learn to be receptive, to have a receptive heart, to listen with the ear of the heart. And I believe if we listen carefully, we will be guided by the spirit within us, which is the one spirit of creation. There aren't two. It will guide us to where it knows we can work for the benefit of the whole. We often don't know. This is something you learn in mysticism. You don't know. It's a path of unknowing. I do not ask to see. I do not ask to know. I ask only to be used. And if we take that prayer into our practice, then I feel we will be guided to in the service that suits our nature best. I am have a certain academic mind. I can also lecture. I'm not so good at gardening. I'm learning the last couple of years. I've had a good harvest of potatoes. But I'm not really a gardener, so I'm good at talking and writing. So I've made that my contribution. And but each of us has a calling. And it can be a small calling, say, to make a community garden, to make a farmer's market. It can be, to set up a website that encourages people to follow these values. There are so many ways to be of service. But first we have to listen. It shouldn't come from the ego. It shouldn't come from desire. It should come from this greater wholeness of which we are a part. To me, that is very important. First prayer, and then the action that comes from prayer.
Yes. Oh, so true. To not let our minds and ego get in this, but rather to base it in spirit. And you mentioned that so often in the Western world, we've got it reversed, where doing precedes being. And mm-hmm. Of course, what all of this timeless wisdom shares is no, being needs to precede doing, because it's in being, going within to mm-hmm. this connection to the inner worlds, where we come in touch with spirit and where we really hear what is ours to hear.
That is true.
It's as easy as that, as hard and as easy as that, just making that time to go within. And we don't ever want to be... we don't want our parents or our friends or our boss at work to be directing our lives or our steps. It's really it's an inside job going
it's
with
very,
that.
It's very, very important to give a certain
spirit.
Time every day to be silent, to be alone, no cell phone, no email, just to be silent, it can just be 15 minutes. I can be going for a walk in which you watch your breath, in which you place every foot in a sacred manner on the earth, or it can be sitting in meditation. But please do it, because it can reconnect us to something that is beyond the clamor and the clatter of what a friend called these weapons of mass distraction that surround us. It is very, very difficult to create a space where we don't have this distraction that takes our attention away from what is essential. And all this buying and selling and ideas, and to a deeper silence from which true wisdom comes.
Yes, I came from the technology world, as I've mentioned. I was mm-hmm. A leader in technology in Silicon Valley. And, what's interesting is the Waldorf schools are very big there.
Yeah.
Why? Because they recognize themselves that technology is not to be abused. In fact, Steve Jobs, if you read his
mm-hmm.
autobiography,
yes.
He says, no, he didn't have his kids,
right.
using technology until they were quite
right.
a bit older. That's true for many of the leaders
yes.
that in Silicon Valley. They see the abuse of technology. And this encyclical, which we've been referring to
mm-hmm.
during this call by the Pope, also talks about the abuse of technology,
yes.
how it's we haven't set boundaries. And unfortunately, it's going the other way, where now at dinner or at a meal at a restaurant, so often you'll see the whole family with a mobile device.
Luckily, I am too old for that, Steve. I belong to a different generation.
Well, you look like you're from the Fountain of Youth. Llewellyn, you look like you're about 40. So,
I don't know about that.
And that's probably because of the lifestyle you live.
It's really important just to close all the doors, shut all the windows, as Lao Tzu said. The further you go, the less you know.
Yes, well, I love, too, your sharing. As we get in touch with what is ours to do, what spiritual activism we're going to pursue, going within, and then it's framed very different then by different leaders. Some say talk about finding our passion, following our bliss, mm-hmm. Joseph Campbell, and then Andrew Harvey says, well, find what breaks our heart, and I think they're really all saying the same thing.
And find people who resonate with you. This is one of what is interesting. As I say, when I was 23, I was woken up on the plane of oneness, and I was shown how that works. And there, people are known by how they are similar. In this world, we identify ourselves because we are different. We want to be different to our parents or have something different. In the plane of the soul, we are recognized by how we resonate. Find people who resonate with you. There are groups of souls that have group soul work to do together in the world. As one old Sufi says, we recognize each other by smell like horses. Find people, human beings who resonate with you and make a group, because you can't do this work on your own. It's so difficult. The culture we live in is so dense. The material thought forms are so draining. Find a group that resonate with you and then begin the work of healing yourself and healing the world together. I don't think you can do it on your own. Work like you do connects people together and makes people aware there is a community. It's very, very important, but find people who resonate with you, with your beliefs, with the way you are made inwardly. Because my sense is to say there are these networks of groups, of souls that have come together to work together to help this work of healing and transformation.
I love your covering this point, Llewellyn, because I think this is the big inhibitor as I talk to other leaders in this area of the new spirituality. Often the discussion turns to, why is it not going faster? What is slowing it down? And this is the thing that I believe is it's social support, that so often people within their own families, within their group of friends, within their community, they don't have a lot of support. And people are, it's hard to really carry on this work, to live it fully and deeply. And then to go step out as a public service person giving talks and things without support, it's hard, maybe impossible, I don't know.
Think you can do it. But if you recognize from the beginning you are part of a living oneness, so I always say oneness is not an idea, it is a life force, it is a living presence. If you recognize, and this is why your work is so important, Steve, if you recognize from the beginning that you are part of oneness, then oneness will take you where it wants you to go. We are not awakening into oneness. Oneness is awakening within us. And then, in a way, you turn the tables. Then you allow oneness to take you where it wants you to go. And life responds. Life is magical. That's why it is interesting that you mentioned Joseph Campbell. He says, follow your bliss. Now, again, there's a second part of that, which not so many people know, which he says, if you follow your bliss, you will find unseen hands will open doors you didn't even know existed. And mm-hmm. once you step into that oneness, then oneness will open doors for you. It could be just a chance meeting, a book that falls off a bookshelf. It could be a search on the internet. There are angels within Google, surprisingly, that will take you where you want to go. And then you will find you are part of this living oneness, and then you will find a community that you can work with, that can support you, and you can support them.
Absolutely, and there's so many miracles that manifest when we just really step out and our authenticity and follow the work, follow our calling. And I know, boy, that's a whole other 2-hour phone call there.
Well, you've experienced that in your own work so much, Steve.
I'll just say, yeah, oh my God, I left Silicon Valley. I left a paycheck. I adopted my children. I moved with my family to Boulder from Silicon Valley. And God has every step of the way just poured on the support in so many ways. And everybody I talk to shares a similar story. Of course, the miracles are all quite different. But
oneness works. That's why.
Oneness does work.
My first book I wrote about it was called Working with Oneness. If people understood how oneness works, it's much more efficient. It's much more cost-effective than duality. And it's how life is meant to work. Oneness works.
And this is the new paradigm that's emerging. That's what is exciting. This I mentioned. Llewellyn saw an eagle fly, which is symbolic in 2012.
Well, what was interesting is that we were in a meditation group, and this eagle landed, bald eagle landed just outside the window, and people looked and said, "Oh, bald eagle," and I sat there and said, "Oh, very nice, very nice." And I sat there, and the eagle sat there, and this went on. And then suddenly I remembered that in the Native American tradition, the eagle is a messenger from the spirit world. And I was so stupid, Steve. There was I been talking about the inner world and the spirit world and meditation for years. And an eagle comes and lands outside. And it waits there 10 minutes for me to get it. And once I got the message it brought, which was that in a particular way the Mayan prophecies were true, not in the way people thought, but in a very particular way a connection had been made to a completely other dimension that we might not understand for many generations to come. Once I'd got the message, the bald eagle looked at me, opened its wings, and flew out across the bay. We never saw it again.
Beautiful. Well, I know we all have those stories we could tell where something was just looking us, a truth, a wisdom, deep, deep wisdom that was looking us right in the eye. And then maybe, you know, it took us a little while to really get it. But God's right there with us. And, you know, not just with us, within us. And that is, of course, the whole story of oneness.
It is.
God, divinity, spirit, it lives within each of us and within all of life and all of the cosmos. Well, I'm going to just start to wind it down because we do only have 4 minutes left. I want to refer people to Llewellyn Von Lee's sites, workingwithoneness.org, where that incredible video is called You Are Oneness, and also spiritualecology.org. Be sure to check out that site. Llewellyn, I want to thank you. Gosh, you were fabulous, and it's the first time we've ever extended a call like this on the fly. I'm going to say some thanks some more before we hang up, but just want to start with by saying thank you so much.
Well, it's been wonderful to talk with you, Steve. It's just been a resonance of oneness. What more can one say?